Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website, which is www.theorganicview.com. If you have any questions or would like to connect with us, you can simply post your question on our wall on Facebook, send us a tweet to @TheOrganicView, or contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. Today's show is sponsored by Eden Foods, one of the most trusted names in certified organic clean foods. Listeners of the Organic View Radio Show can receive 20% off any regularly priced items, excluding cases. Simply enter the coupon code ORGVIEW when prompted during checkout. That's ORGVIEW. For more special offers, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com. On today's show, Dr. Dave Goulson, professor of bumblebee ecology and conservation at the University of Sussex, will talk about his delightful new book called A Sting in the Tail. So I'd like to welcome back to the show Dr. Dave Goulson. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome back to the show. So great to have you back.
Thanks very much. Good afternoon to you, too.
Dr. Goulson, could you please share a little bit about yourself for our listeners who are not familiar with your research?
Yeah, so I'm a professor of biology. I've spent about the last 20 years studying mainly bumblebees, why they're declining and what we can do to help them.
What exactly drew you to bumblebees? How did you become interested in them?
I've been asked that many times, and it's very hard to say. I think I was essentially, from as long back as I can remember, I was a bit of a sort of wildlife nut. I have a really early memory, which is described in the book, from when I was about 7, when I tried to rescue some bumblebees that had got caught out in the rain by sticking them on the kitchen stove, which wasn't such a good idea, it turned out. But so I've been interested in them forever, but I didn't really start studying them professionally until about 20 years ago, when I managed to get myself a permanent faculty job at a university, and then had the freedom to do what I wanted, and bumblebees kind of caught my eye as by far the most interesting of our insects, and it's kept me busy ever since.
Now, it's interesting, you didn't grow up with a family that was particularly interested in bumblebees. Can you share with our audience a little bit about your own background?
I don't know where it came from. My parents were school teachers. Dad was a history teacher and my mum was a PE teacher. So it wasn't obvious where an interest in biology came from. But I was brought up in a little village called Edgemond in Shropshire, which is a kind of quiet rural county in the Midlands of England, just east of Wales, if that helps to pinpoint it in your mind. From a very early age, somehow was interested in natural history. And thankfully, my parents were very encouraging. They didn't know anything about it, but they were happy to buy me books and let me buy butterfly nets and start collecting butterflies, which I hesitate to mention that I used to collect butterflies, because it's kind of a bit of a taboo thing to do these days. But at the time, it was acceptable, and it was a great way into getting interested in natural history. I still, to this day, have my collection of butterflies that I collected when I was 6, 7, 8, 9 years old.
Now, for the parents that are out there listening to this interview, do you have any advice as far as how to encourage their children to study and learn?
Kids increasingly don't spend much time outdoors. They're not allowed to go out without supervision so much, and most kids don't really encounter nature very much, and it's not really done much at schools either. So many schools don't really take the kids out too much. They don't teach them about the natural world. And yet, you know, what could be more important than understanding the world we live in? So, I mean, I am a parent. I've got three boys between 12 and 3, 12, 10 and 3 at the moment they are. They love wildlife, right? And I have tried not to indoctrinate them, but I just take them out and go on bug hunts and run around in the field with nets and see what we can catch. I tell them about the things we find. And so they are engaged with the natural world. They know a little bit about it. They can recognize the creatures around them, and they know how they interact to some extent and so on. But I think most kids don't have that chance, and that's really sad. So I guess this, my simple advice would be to you know, take your kids outside, get them out in the fresh air, and try and get them to, you know, go pond dipping, go and hunt the butterfly, take photographs of them. You don't need to put pins through them anymore. Even a phone on a digital camera, on a mobile phone camera is good enough to get pretty good insect pictures. Make a collection of those, see how many species you can find. So there's lots of things you can do. Get them interested, basically. Don't let them grow up, those kids that spend their whole time on their computer and that have never been outside and don't know the difference between, well, I'd say a blackbird and a robin, but those species might not be so relevant on the other side of the Atlantic, but you get the idea.
Thank you. Can you share some interesting facts about bumblebees that people don't necessarily know?
Oh, there are so many things about bumblebees that people don't know. And we keep finding out new ones all the time. I mean, that's the fun of being a scientist studying something is, every day we find out something. It often might seem very small, trivial things. So some things people probably don't know about bumblebees. They've been around for about 30 million years, so an awful lot longer than we have. We think actually they probably evolved in the Himalayas, and they're cold climate creatures. They're big and furry because that helps them to keep warm and to fly in really cold weather. So you get them right up into the Arctic Circle where a bumblebee is, one of the most northerly insects in the world. And one of their clever tricks is they can keep warm. They're warm-blooded. So they generate heat by flapping their wings about 200 times a second, and that generates lots of heat, which they keep in with the fur, which means they can fly around when the air temperature is below freezing, and they can still fly, which almost no other insects can do. But that comes at a cost, so it uses loads of energy to keep a bumblebee in the air. So a bumblebee is only ever about 40 minutes from starving, so if she leaves the nest in the full stomach full of honey, she can fly for about 40 minutes before she's burnt all of her sugar, and then she's grounded. So a statistic that sometimes, well, that was once calculated, which I think is quite kind of interesting, is a running man uses up the calories in a Mars bar in about an hour of running, whereas if you had a man-sized bumblebee, they would use up the calories in that Mars bar in 30 seconds of flying, which kind of illustrates just how energy demanding their life is, and it explains why they're so sensitive to the decline in flowers in the countryside. One of the things that's hit bumblebees over the last 100 years is that farming these days doesn't have many flowers, doesn't leave much room for wildflowers or weeds or anything else but the crops, and so there aren't many flowers, and yet bees have this huge energy requirement to keep them in the air. They need lots of flowers, and if there aren't enough, then they can't fly, and ultimately they're doomed. But yeah, I could talk all day about bumblebees, to be honest. There are a million things that people don't know, and millions more that I don't know that none of us yet know, but hopefully I'll find out a few of before I retire.
Thank you. Now, in regards to your book, A Sting in the Tail, what inspired you to take the time to write understand, no matter how much they've studied, but you clearly have that connection.
The main reason for writing the book was that I wanted to tell more people about bees than, so as a scientist is a very insular world. A scientist's job is to do research and write scientific papers that we get published in scientific journals, and then they're read by the few other people interested in bumblebee research in the world, and they go away and do their own research, and I read their papers, and it goes round and round in circles with just a few dozen people involved across the entire globe. And if you're interested in bee conservation, for example, like I am, that's kind of frustrating because it doesn't actually really help the bees if you understand more about them unless someone actually does something. So The real reason for writing the book was to try and popularize these creatures. You know, they're fascinating little beasts, they're really important for the pollination they do, about crops and wildlife and so on. And most people don't know anything about them at all. Many people think they're just one species of bee in the world. And they think it lives in a box and makes honey. But if you ask them to draw it, they'll draw a big round fat thing with yellow and black stripes, which is a bumblebee. So a honeybee is the thing that produce honey, obviously, and they've been boxed. Bumblebees are very different. Just for the record, there are many thousands of other species of bee as well. And people just don't appreciate both just how interesting and diverse these creatures are and how important they are. So the idea was to write a popular book that anyone could read that would draw them in, that would tell them all about the kind of intriguing, interesting lives of these creatures, and explain it from a kind of personal perspective, you know, how I got interested in them, what it is that I find interesting, as a way, hopefully, of engaging as many people as I possibly can.
Thank you. Can you talk a little bit about the Bumblebee Conservation Trust?
So the Bumblebee Conservation Trust is a UK charity that I set up in 2006 with the aim of taking science and putting it into action. So we know a lot about what we need to do to ensure that bumblebees don't decline any further and hopefully to boost their populations. But just publishing papers about them doesn't really help the bees directly at all. So I set up the trust to try and get as many people as I could actually involved in doing practical things to help bumblebees. So that for example, the biggest one is that we can all do is helping to create habitats. So the trust is involved in lots of bigger scale habitat creation projects, planting flowery meadows and so on. But individuals can get involved in that, just by planting a few bee-friendly flowers in their garden at home. And so the trust is basically a way of trying to harness and encourage and foster interest in bees and practical activities to help bees. As I say, they're nice because, for one, they do something that is easy to explain and is really important to all of us, pollinating crops and flowers. And also because we can all help. It's very different to say, you might hear on the radio that polar bears are doomed because the ice caps are melting, all the rainforest is being cut down, and it's really difficult to know what you can do as an individual to help. Well, with bees it's different because everyone can help. You just put one lavender bush in your garden, or ideally a mix of a few bee-friendly plants. Don't spray them with any pesticides, whatever you do. And within a few days, if you buy mature plants, you'll see happy bees feeding, and you'll have provided them with a bit of extra food, which really does make a difference. If everyone did that, if every garden in North America and Europe had a few bee-friendly flowers, then our bees would be doing pretty well. So the trust, that's what it's all about, is getting people involved in trying to make a real difference to conserve bees.
Thank you. And can you share for our listeners the website information as well as any contact information so people, especially parents and teachers, can encourage their students and other young people to get involved with the charity?
Yeah, so the website is www.bumblebeeconservation.org. It has lots of information about things that are going on. You can join the trust, but you can also join the various citizen science related projects. Many of them are focused on the UK because it is primarily a UK charity, although it does have members elsewhere in the world. I think it would be really wonderful if there were a North American equivalent, and maybe it's time we try to set up a North American branch somehow.
I couldn't agree more. Dr. Goulson, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about your work and also for your delightful new book, A Sting in the Tail. Can you also share with our listeners where they can pick up a copy of the book?
You can get a copy almost anywhere, all the usual online websites, although I'd urge you to buy them from a bookshop. Barnes & Noble is a big chain, I believe, over there, which stocks them. The reason I say buy them from a proper bookshop is because the online stores rather squeeze the profit margin for all involved, apart from themselves. But wherever you can get it, I hope if you do get a copy that you enjoy it.
Thank you. And folks, please visit our website, theorganicview.com, where we will list all the information for Dr. Goulson and for the Bumblebee Conservation Trust so that you can encourage young people as well as people that you know, your friends and family, to get involved and to do what you can to help the bumblebees as well as other pollinators. And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.